Great.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. I hope, by the way, that we're starting this at 12 minutes past 9, Mr. Timekeeper. Full hour, and I promise I'll get it done in time. Right, now, many of you might be expecting a talk which is anti-technology. You're going to be disappointed. Because believe it or not, I absolutely love technology. In fact, if Bill Gates was a bit prettier looking, and he was here now, I'd give him a kiss, and I'd say, gee, Bill, thanks for inventing PowerPoint, because thanks to PowerPoint, I can give this lovely audience a presentation. And the guys who invented Google, I can say thanks to you as well, because thanks to Google, I don't need to go to a library. I can provide from my own desk all the information I need for a conference like this. But I'm not a child. I'm, if you haven't noticed, a middle-aged man. And this discussion isn't about whether technology is good or bad, the simplistic way that the media talks about it. It's whether the premature introduction and the overuse of technology is damaging to children whose brains are not yet fully formed. And this is the real debate. It isn't, you know, is it good, is it bad? That's a very dumb way to be discussing something like technology. Now, there's a great deal of pressure both upon you as policymakers and as parents and as members of society in New Zealand to believe that children must start to use technology early and to use it more, because this is the way they're going to work in future. And if they don't start to use it early and often, then in some way they're going to lose out, or they're going to be intimidated by it later on. This is simply not true. It is absolute rubbish, full stop. Even monkeys can learn how to use software and computers. And in fact, at the Dallas Zoo in Texas, it's been found that gorillas have their favorite educational TV programs. In fact, they have opinions on a wide variety of programs, which I've written down for your benefit. They've reported that they all like Disney cartoons. The Little Mermaid, The Lion King, and Beauty and the Beast are their favorites, by the way. But there's one teenage gorilla called Patrick. He's a bit more upmarket because he has a penchant for public television and National Geographic specials. But he's bored by sports and the news, doesn't like them very much. But the zoo explained, quote, all the gorillas don't follow the story, of course. They like the music, the color, and the movement. Just like young children and babies, by the way. And I know this is basically a Christian conference, but this is a biology study. Monkeys like sexual imagery. There is monkey porn. So they respond to screens the same way that some adults respond to screens. Monkeys, in fact, male monkeys, surprise, surprise, will pay to watch monkey porn. Male monkeys are more willing to pay by giving over some of their favorite food, which is cherry juice, to see images of female monkeys' hind quarters. This is published in Current Biology. The study is entitled Monkey Pay-Per-View. So the idea that humans have to be introduced to all kinds of technology early because they just won't catch on to it is garbage, because even primates can do it, and some of the stuff they watch is educational, and some of it might be educational in a way that you might not approve of. So it's certainly hardwired into children and all of us to be able to deal with screens and deal with software and deal with computers. And we mustn't be bullied into thinking that we have to introduce it early or children will lose out. Just because children are interested in something does not mean it is in their best interest to have it. And that is the logic by which many laws and many forms of weak parenting are directed by. Well, they're interested in it, so it must be good for them. Well, in America, kids are interested in handguns. In many countries, kids are interested in cocaine and pornography. They're interested in deep water and busy roads that have traffic on them. It doesn't mean that they should go into the busy roads or the deep water or to have the handguns or be given access to cocaine. This is not the kind of imperative by which we make decisions about child well-being. Their interests are secondary to what is in their best interests. And this really should be guiding public policy, laws, and parenting in all countries. And I think in many ways this is what's taken over our culture. Now, when we're talking about technology, one of the unfortunate things, and when I look at newspaper accounts of research and studies, and I also see who is giving politicians information and advice on public policy regarding electronic media. I take a look at the small print, and in most of the cases, what I'm seeing is that this area is being dominated by experts in technology and e-learning. Their focus is on, surprise, surprise, technology and e-learning. And these are professors whose expertise is not child health. It's not child well-being. It's media and how children relate to it. So in other words, if we were here to talk about children's health and obesity and cancer from food, and we got our opinions from scientists who studied how much children do or do not like sweets, or what kind of hamburgers children want, these aren't the scientists we would listen to. We would listen to scientists who talk about how do the hamburgers and the sweets affect the bloodstreams of the children. And this is the same difference we're finding in discussions of technology. We're looking at researchers who are interested in how children look at the screen and what they like and how they relate and how they wiggle and how they interact with it. That's completely irrelevant. We need to be listening to people whose only interest is in child well-being, and their voice is not being heard loudly enough. This is really what's driven me to be writing and speaking about electronic media, because I understand their studies, I hunt them down, and I try to connect them so they make one cohesive picture for groups like you to understand. This information on electronic media should be coming from academics associated with child health, not those whose expertise is media and how children relate to it. And also, of course, there are the research funds and the conferences which I'm invited to speak at. They're backed by big corporate money from the software manufacturers and the technology industry. And by the way, they approach me, they send me emails, they offer me money to say nice things about their products or to say that brain training devices will make adults and children brighter. They don't, by the way. And they also won't save your memory. But the question is, why are these educational television people contacting me? Why are the software manufacturers contacting me and offering me money? If their products are so good, presumably they shouldn't need to do that. Now, we talk about young people and electronic media, or young people and technology. And we often hear, well, yes, those effects are on television, but young people do social networking nowadays. And of course, we talk of social networking, we talk about computer games, emailing, e-learning, mobile phones with screens on them, texting, watching TV, surfing the net, instant messaging. We distinguish between these categories, but they are market sectors. The brains and the young minds of children do not distinguish very much between these various labels. So we should be talking about screen time and screen technology. And the industries that try to confuse the matter by saying, oh yes, but those effects are by television, but my son does computer games, so that's very different. The effects are not that different, and that's what I'm going to be spelling out for you today. So what I'm going to do, and I really would like to have several hours to do this, but you probably fall asleep, is to give you a snapshot of what science journals are now publishing about the widespread effects of television, and all kinds of screen technology, by the way. So I'm going to do a quick tour de force, just a snapshot to give you a flavor. Obviously, you can look into this yourself later on, and don't worry too much about the detail. I have intentionally, in most cases, simply cut and pasted the medical conclusions right from the medical journals, so that none of you get the crazy idea that these are just positions that I've adopted. These are my opinions because I just want to be a bit radical or something. These are the direct conclusions of scientists who couldn't care less what the outcome of the studies are. They simply want to tell you what they've found. Now, one of the reasons I've come to the conclusions that I have isn't just because I've read science journals. It's also because I've traveled around the world. I've gone to a wide variety of countries. I'll show you my travel photos in my next talk, by the way. But in short, I've been to a wide variety of countries. I've been to countries as television arrives for the first time. I've been to countries after it's just arrived. I've been to countries where it's been there for a long time. I speak to doctors, nurses, teachers, and parents who, together, all over the world, have painted exactly the same picture. When the screens arrived, our children got fatter. When the screens arrived, behavior changed very dramatically and has not returned to the way it was before. And by the way, none of them ever said it changed for the better. So I tried to combine the scientific studies with my own observations from around the world, speaking to health professionals and parents. And also, I'm a parent as well, as Bob said. I see children, a lot of them who have a lot of screens in their bedrooms, children who have none. So on a day-to-day basis, I also see how children grow up. Just to give you an idea, I can see it back there. The last one was Bhutan. This is where television arrived, the last country on earth to have television. This is Bolivia. Far eastern Siberia. You can see there, that's the city of Khabarovsk. That is Lenin Square. The statue right there is Lenin. He wouldn't be very happy. He'd be turning in his grave. He could see what's happened just above his statue. A massive television screen advertising capitalism, not communism. A mobile phone, and the mobile phone has an advertisement on its screen as well. A sickening form of irony, but that's what's happened there. So I've seen screens all over the place. And, sorry, wrong button. There we go. One of the places I went to within the last couple of years was Sumatra, high in the hills of a small town. Social networking arrived in an open, large shack. All day long, these kinds of girls were sitting there chatting to people from around the world. And I asked them, I came here for breakfast this morning, and you were at the screen. What are you doing? It's 8 hours later, and I'm having dinner. Oh, I'm chatting. Who are you chatting to? Oh, someone in Greece. Have you ever met them? No. Will you ever meet them? Oh, no. Well, did you chat to any of your friends that live in this town here today? Oh, not really. This is what I'm seeing around the world now. When the screens arrive, the social interaction between young people is stopping. And this picture right here encapsulated what I'm seeing more and more as I travel around the world. So one of the things I had an interest in was when you look at what I feel is absolutely imperative for children, which is eye-to-eye contact, face-to-face contact every day with people they love, i.e., hopefully, their parents, their friends, their family. And what I wanted to do for this journal called Biologist was to try to use time use studies from around the world, to try to map out over the 20-year period. You can see here, 1987, 2007. 1987, on average, how much eye-to-eye contact did the average person have? And how much did it change between 87 and 2007? You can see right here, it started out reasonably high, and it went down. 1987, how much eye-to-screen contact did we have? You can see it's gone up. And right around the year 1988-9, life became virtual. And for most young people, it is now virtual, and that's a very important change. This is unprecedented in our society. Since we became human, since our species, arose or was created, we haven't lived like this. And this is a very profound moment for us. And with this, there have been some very big changes. There has been reduced social interaction. If you look at just television alone, a recent study in Britain by the Children's Society found that television alone is displacing the parental role, eclipsing, quote, by a factor of 5 or 10, the amount of time that parents spend actively engaging with children. So that's just with television. Stanford University tried to look at, we're told, of course, but the internet's great because we're all socially interacting more. We have more friends and we're more connected to them. No, we're not. And no, our children are not. And we as families are not connected with one another the way that we used to be. Time spent, this is a quote directly from them, time spent using the internet is negatively associated with time spent with family and in time spent with friends. For each hour we spend on the internet, we lose 30 minutes in face-to-face interaction. It is a hydraulic relationship, they say. So it has not made us more sociable, it has made us less sociable. I don't have time now, but there are also studies looking at how many friends does the average person have now compared to before. It's all dropped. How many people actually don't see anybody all day long? That's also increased, and so it goes on. So we see one another, particularly people we love, less. We look them in the eyes less than we used to, even at the dinner table. And one of the big changes has been when you talk about the effects of television, people say, children are social networking now. But the important thing to know is that they're watching more television, as it says right there. This has now overtaken television, including online games, as the main reason to use the internet. And study is now far behind. Children are not using the internet for nice educational purposes. They're simply either socially networking or they're playing online games. The idea of studying for their exam seems to be way down the list. And they're also, by the way, watching more television in addition to doing this. So in Britain, and this is now out of date, the average, and I use the words, you know, advisedly, the average 11 to 15-year-old is now spending 7.5 hours a day in front of screens, 53 hours a week, 55% of their waking lives. That was in 2004. My talk to you isn't about what they are watching. Whether they are watching things which are bad for them, or whether they are watching things which have been touted as educational, is not what this talk is about. Just the medium of the screen, the number of hours, is a medical and health and development issue now. We are here to talk about the medium. After me, Melinda Tankard Rice will talk to you about the effect of the content. But that's another matter altogether. Before we even consider the content, we need to consider the number of hours and the physiological changes. And that's what I'm going to give you a run through. There is what we call a dose-response relationship appearing in medical journals, meaning that the number of hours a day is linked to the probability of things happening to children's bodies, and the age at which they start watching is also an important matter. The quality of the program in this discussion is completely irrelevant. Okay, so just because a child is watching, you know, 4 hours or 3 hours of educational television does not negate many of the effects I'm here to talk to you about today. And this is the way the discussion has been dismissed. Ah, it's about quality television. Yes, of course, if they're watching pornography or they're watching nasty American cartoons, those things might happen. But this is lovely educational television. Nonsense. These effects have been found irrespective of all of that. So listen up here. Just for example, right here, the American Medical Association, May 2010, recent stuff, Archives of Pediatric and Adolescent Medicine, TV exposure at 29 months and 53 months. Then they looked at the effects at the age of 10. Quote, between the ages of 2 and 4, even slow incremental exposure to television delayed children's development. Quote, although we expected the impact of early TV viewing to disappear after 7.5 years of childhood, the fact that negative outcomes remained is quite daunting. Those negative outcomes, by the way, were wide-ranging, to do with health and to do with academic achievement. The American Medical Association, by the way, these are the details right here. Every additional hour of TV exposure among toddlers corresponded to a future decrease in classroom engagement and success at math, increased victimization by classmates, a more sedentary lifestyle, higher consumption of junk food, and ultimately higher body mass index, now known as being fat, by the way. What do we have here? Right. Just to offset all this terrible negative news, it's important that you see this as a point of comparison with something that's good for children. A new study in Britain looked at what benefits do children have to them if you read them a story before they go to bed. Reading to your children, right here. If you read to your children at age 3, at age 5, they will score more highly in language and literacy, knowledge and understanding of the world, maths, social and emotional development, physical development, and creative development. So that's a very good point of comparison and a very good reference point for you as policymakers or you as parents to make your judgments about how your children should be spending their time. Physiological effects, pubertal hormones, hormones that influence the likelihood of children reaching puberty earlier or later. Interesting study, children between 6 and 12 years old were deprived of their screen media and video games for a couple of weeks. What they found was that an important hormone which delays puberty then increased. So it appeared, so I'll just read you the conclusion, exposure to a television screen or any kind of computer screen was associated with lower urinary melatonin levels, particularly affecting younger children at a pubertal stage when important changes in melanin's role take place. This is in the journal called Neuroendocrinology Letters. It's not a comic book. The interesting thing is, and what it means in real language, is that it appears that as children spend the normal amount of hours in front of screens, the levels of melatonin are actually being suppressed most of the time. And when you take the screens away, they suddenly rise to a normal level. And the scientists suggested that this may be one of the explanations as to why girls are reaching puberty earlier nowadays. And an interesting one at that, one that I'd never thought of myself. Completely different effect on metabolism. We all believe that television might make us or our children fat because they're just sitting there. All that's true. Of course, sedentary activity is going to make you more likely to get fat. But there are many other reasons why television will make you fat and your children fat. Journal of the American Medical Association, quote, television viewing lowers metabolic rate, burning fewer calories compared with other sedentary activities such as sewing, reading, writing, or driving a car. Television is special, it's different, and it seems to lower metabolism in ways we didn't expect it to. A very new study in the journal Obesity Reviews, again, these are very, very new here, those doing computer-based tasks burnt only 3 more calories than those who didn't. We keep being told, well, television might be fattening, but surely educational computers and writing things and all this must be good for you. Well, take a look at this. Those doing computer-based tasks, which in fact, by the way, was editing text, somewhat educational, for only 40 minutes, they only burned 3 more calories than people who didn't do that. But when they were given a buffet compared to people who hadn't done this educational stuff, they ate much more food when given access to a buffet, an extra 230 calories. They described screen media, this educational screen media, as obesogenic, means screens basically make you fat. For reasons, again, the first reason was metabolism. This is one is to do with burning calories. Screen time and metabolic risk factors, American Medical Association, July 2010, just a few weeks ago. Adolescent boys, what they did was to take blood tests from them. Those with screen time in general, of 2 or more hours per day on weekdays, have twice the risk of abnormal levels of insulin and this very complicated enzyme right here, HOMA-IR, which I went to the trouble of spelling for you. It's Homeostasis Model Assessment of Insulin Resistance, but you can just call it HOMA-IR. Basically, it changed the levels quite significantly. They're abnormal after spending 2 or more hours with screen time. And 2 or more hours is way, way, way below the national average in most countries. So these changes are happening to children who watch well below the average of screen time. We should pay attention to these studies, not to the media professors who say, oh, but our children love to interact with screens. Ignore those people. These people are more important. The Lancet. Not a comic book. Have any of you ever heard of The Lancet before? Right. Probably the world's most famous medical journal. Right. They follow children from birth. They looked at what happens if you look at television viewing when they're younger and you look at how it affects them when they're 26 years old. Are there any long-lasting effects? Yes, there are. Raised cholesterol, obesity, poor cardiorespiratory fitness, and higher levels of smoking, quote, can be attributed to watching television for more than 2 hours a day during childhood and adolescence. Death, a nice cheery subject. Whether you go to heaven or hell makes no difference. You'll get there just as quickly, according to this formula right there. This is from the Journal of the American Heart Association. This has just been published. Each daily hour of television viewing is associated with an 18% increase in deaths from heart disease, an 11% increase in overall mortality from all kinds of causes. And more specifically, 4 or more hours of television per day. And by the way, in Britain, the average is now 4. It's gone up. There's an 80%, you're more 80% more likely to die of cardiovascular disease than if you watch 2 hours or less. You're 46% more likely to die of any old cause. And it did not matter whether you were fat to begin with. So this idea is, well, those are obviously fat couch potatoes, so of course they're going to die more. No. This happened to skinny people as well. The scientists suspect that an unhealthy influence on blood sugar and blood fats may underlie these results. We'll move on to brain, different body part right here, the World Federation of Neurology. Again, these people are not e-learning and technology specialists. These are not Professor Screen or Professor Tech. These are people who are interested what happens to children's brains when they look at nice, lovely, educational, interactive computer screens. So what they did was that they monitored the blood flow of the brains of children who were looking at these screens. And what they did was that they had children do simple arithmetic. 1 and 1 is 2, 1 and 2 is 3, etc., etc. Then they compared that with the blood flow in the brain when children had a chance to interact with a computer, which, of course, we all know is a lot more contemporary and educational. And guess what? Quote, Interactive computer games were associated with limited neurological activity, reduced cerebral blood flow in comparison to the math. Quote, the computer only stimulated activity in those parts associated with vision and movement, in other words, using a mouse, as compared to arithmetic-stimulated brain activity in both frontal lobes. So that's one of the findings that very few people seem to know about. Let me see if we can get this other comment. They're concerned about the consequences. The scientist said, this is halting the process of frontal lobe development and affecting children's ability to control antisocial elements of their behavior. It's alarming. Continuing alarming, computer games stunted the developing mind. So they don't think that these computers at young ages actually help to develop the mind. They use the word stunted, probably for a good reason. Screens and sleep disorders. I never thought this would be the case, but just passive viewing, just have TV on in the background that a child's not interested in, is apparently directly related to the child having sleep problems. Quote, TV viewing, and particularly passive TV viewing, significantly increases the risk of sleeping difficulties in children. Quote, parents should control the quantity of TV viewing and to limit children's exposure to passive TV. So if children are being affected by television they're not even watching, and even more affected by television that they are watching, we should be paying attention to this. And again, listening to people whose expertise is in child health, not people whose expertise is in how children interact with media. And I keep having to say this again and again, because this discussion is continually dominated by professors who are involved in media studies and how children love media. They're very unimportant people in this discussion. Background TV again. Child development, 2008. Background television, even adult television, disrupts younger children's ability to play and to learn. The children are busy playing and paying attention to something. A television goes on in the background, and it has a dramatic and instant effect on their playing. And the scientists are worried about the consequences of this. There was a large reduction in the amount of time the child played with their toy and their degree of concentration. Quote, these findings have implication for subsequent cognitive development. So again, these last two studies are just to do with passive ambient viewing, not even the direct effects of the screens themselves. Autism. Right, I'll just run you through this quickly. Viewing computers, television, and DVs under age 3, quote, may be an important trigger for autism. Nearly 40% of autism diagnoses studied were associated with watching screens below the age of 3. Quote, we have evidence that's awfully suggestive of a link between watching TV and autism. That's Cornell University. Archives of Adolescent and Pediatric Medicine, they published it then in that journal. They published it in two different areas. And again, they're basically saying that they are suspicious that early introduction to television or computers may be triggering something which may have a biological and genetic basis, but it's thought that autism is something which has a genetic basis to it, but there are trigger factors which bring it to the fore, and that screen media may be one of those trigger factors we hadn't thought about. Again, below the age of 3. Attention damage. This is one of the big areas where screen media has been strongly implicated. I'll just go through the first one, and I'll run just to the second ones. ADHD symptoms. The medical journal Pediatrics. Early television exposure is associated with attention problems at age 7. So when they see television at ages 1 and 3, this is what seems to be linked to it. Limit, quote, this is their conclusion, limiting young children's exposure to television as a medium. The important word is medium. During formative years of brain development may reduce children's subsequent risk of developing ADHD. Same problems between ages 5 and 11 here. This is another medical journal. You can see the consequences there. And again, at 14 to 22 years. The reason these things seem to be developing, and it goes beyond, it goes here, not just attention. You're talking about learning difficulties, adverse long-term educational outcomes. Youths who watched one or more hours of television per day at the age of 14 were at elevated risk. I imagine what's happened, and this is what a lot of scientists suspect, that it's the editing speeds that have changed, and the choices and variety. So whether you're seeing lots of fast editing, and by scientists, by the way, have changed their view. They looked at editing speeds even of things like Sesame Street, and they looked at Sesame Street now. They've gone up and up and up. to keep up with the times. And of course, if you're using the internet and you're looking at web pages, you're changing all the time, this does things probably to the levels of dopamine. We know that computers make levels of dopamine go up. It's the attention chemical. And it might be that if you're constantly boosting dopamine levels by playing a lot of computer games or watching television a lot, then you have to go to school where your teacher doesn't do cartwheels, doesn't take your clothes off, and doesn't sing and dance, that you get bored and you simply don't produce the levels of dopamine or you can't use them the way you would normally. So all the kinds of stimulation that you're getting, both in terms of editing speed, and as Melinda will talk to you about afterwards, the levels of either acceptable or unacceptable stimulation due to the content of television or screen media may be changing what turns us on. Very simply, you show people enough exciting stuff and then you put them in front of a classroom and you give them a book, their brains find it boring. So I imagine that's probably at the basis of what we're seeing right here. And by the way, you'll be glad to know that this is an equal opportunity issue, by the way, that even if you're older, even if you're a silver surfer here on the internet, that you too can suffer attention damage. Right, this just came out a few weeks ago right here. Quote, viewing television and playing video games each are associated with increased subsequent attention problems in childhood, late adolescence, and early adulthood. They cut it off at early adulthood, but at least it is adulthood, so it seems to be a relatively ageless thing now. And again, that's a medical journal. It is not an educational or a technology or an interaction journal, and it's important, again, to remember that. One of the things we keep being told about, is it a baby I'm hearing? Is it? That's sweet. By the way, I'm very happy to have babies in the audience because this is a family conference. This is the kind of sound effects and music we should have. We keep being told that multitasking is the future, that both students and people at work are going to need to multitask because this is the way that we run our lives. And for example, Bob McCoskrie is always having to use his BlackBerry. It's the way that you have to operate. This is the way that, you know, people operate nowadays. Absolutely true. I agree with you that if you happen to be a man who runs a big organization like Family First, or you're an academic, you need something like a BlackBerry to do that. But if you're a developing child, no. And there are good reasons, and this is what they found. One of the reasons that there should be great concern about multitasking is it's just because you're going to do it when you're older doesn't mean it's good for you to start early. This may not prepare you for doing it later on. And what we're finding is that multitasking requires constant attentional shifts. There's very little sustained attention, and it's occurring at younger and younger ages. Children first need to develop sustained concentration before you build onto that the ability to then divide your attention. And it seems to be subverting this skill. So a test was done. A couple of things here. This is the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Multitasking is a significant hindrance to learning. The benefits of modern multitasking, it's a myth. These are two different laboratories. They came to the same conclusion. And what these people did at Stanford University, Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, what they did was to take teenagers who do lots of media multitasking, who you would think would be superior at multitasking, and they compared them with teenagers who didn't do much multitasking on tests of multitasking. And guess who did better? The kids who didn't do multitasking were better. This is their conclusion. Heavy media multitaskers performed worse. The shocking discovery of this research is that high multitaskers are lousy at everything that's necessary for multitasking. So again, the idea that we need to get them into the stuff young so they'll be better at it when they're older just isn't true. And it applies to many areas of child development that we don't have time to go into right now. Education. Television viewing in childhood and adolescence is associated with poor educational achievement by 26 years of age and may have long-lasting adverse consequences for educational achievement and subsequent socioeconomic status and well-being, so that you'll be dumb, poor, and fat, apparently, when you reach 26 years of age. That's a medical journal, by the way. And the important thing about these studies I'm showing you, whether it was the metabolic studies or otherwise, it is again to do with this idea of a dose-response relationship. These people said there was a dose-response relationship with, quote, biological plausibility. These findings offer little support for the hypothesis that a small amount of television is beneficial. So again, how many hours and the age at which you start seems to be linked with the likelihood of having the effects that we're discussing here. And then there's what I call the Harry Potter myth. This idea that, oh, well, children love Harry Potter. They're obviously reading more. That's great. They're reading a hell of a lot less, and so are you. The reading levels of adults has dropped dramatically across most of the Western industrialized world, and in children, it's pretty appalling right now. Those few children who do read are more likely to read Harry Potter, or Twilight, or Eclipse. That doesn't mean they're reading more. It simply means that when they do read, or can be bothered to read, they're watching those books. Early exposure to and increasing time spent watching screen technology is linked to a significant continuing decline in time spent reading books. This is Childwise Monitor in Britain, who pays attention to these sort of things. New study by Britain's National Literacy Trust. A third of children did not enjoy reading and found it, quote, boring. Less than half of children, 9 to 14, read fiction more than once a month, and websites are now far more popular. Surprise, surprise. Looking at the reading skills of British children, the SAT results, which are national exams in Britain looking at academic skills, etc., more than a third of 14-year-old boys now have a reading age of 11 or below. More than 1 in 5 have a reading age of 9. What else do we have here? There's also been a decline in cognitive development. The British Journal of Educational Psychology found that an 11-year-old child today is performing at the level of an 8 or 9-year-old child 30 years ago. They describe this as a staggering result in terms of an active drop in cognitive development. Another study looking at a similar thing looked at 14-year-olds, and they found that a 14-year-old today, in terms of their high-level thinking skills, it's called interpretive thinking, deep thinking as opposed to shallow thinking, now has the deep thinking skills of a 12-year-old in 1976. Half as many 14-year-olds now exhibit higher-level interpretive thinking as opposed to quick descriptive thinking, which is click, 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 like that. And they, again, they link this to everything in the past 30 years has speeded up. It's about reacting quickly, but at a shallower level. So we're now finding measurable consequences to time spent in front of too much electronic media, which affect vague, woolly things like abstract thinking and deep thinking. These are important things. We don't want shallow people running our society. Some would argue we have that already, but in any event, we could have a whole generation of people who think about breadth, but not about depth. Increasing time spent in the virtual world of screen technology is now displacing hands-on play and learning that allows young people to experience how the world works in practice and to make informed judgments about abstract concepts. We're finding that those educational DVDs, Brainy Baby and Baby Einstein and those sorts of things, when medical practitioners take a look, what they find is that these do not enhance baby development. They retard the language acquisition. Your baby is less likely to speak as well or as early, and their vocabulary is less likely to be as big. What one study did at a medical school was to compare babies watching with these Brainy Baby and Baby Einstein DVDs with the babies watching Homer Simpson, Oprah Winfrey, the news, and American football, and having their parents join in, which is what you're all told. It's okay if you watch television with little Johnny here. Share the brain damage with him and all that. It didn't make any difference. The only babies who did well were the infants and toddlers who didn't watch any screens at all. They simply went around crawling around or walking around, and they heard their mothers in the background or whatever, which was far more effective than the screen media, which seems to subvert those skills. That's the same kind of finding right there. Their conclusion, no studies to date have demonstrated benefits associated with early infant TV viewing. That's 2 years and younger. Potential for harm. Educational TV, which is a word invented by the people who make the programs. This is not a scientific word, by the way, and you've all been duped by it. Harvard Medical School, two child pediatric experts, they wrote a paper entitled Say No to Teletubbies. Television viewing is exactly the opposite of what toddlers need for their development. Young children's television viewing should be postponed as long as possible. Why would Harvard Medical School write anything like that? Probably because they're thick, I should think. The video deficit effect. What they found was that when you show children a task on a screen, somebody demonstrating it, and then you show them the exact same thing with a person live, they don't learn as well with the person on the screen. When learning from videos is assessed in comparison to its equivalent live, there is usually substantially less learning from videos. We should learn something about learning from these learning videos. The children learn better from real life, not from electronic media during their early years. Educational computers, brain training devices. A group of neuroscientists were asked in Britain to assess these things. Quote, if people are if people are under the illusion that these devices are scientifically proven to keep their minds in shape, they need to think again. So all of you people hoping to save your middle-aged memories, have a chat with one another instead. It's more effective, apparently. Educational computers, June 2010, 150,000 pupils aged 10 to 14 years. What they did was that they... Home computers were given to children at this age to be used for education at home. They also compared children who had them already and those who didn't have them already. They compared underprivileged with privileged to see what kind of changes, good changes, would happen. The conclusion was the introduction of home computer technology is associated with statistically significant and persistent negative impacts on student math and reading test scores. Romania, similar kind of study. What they found again, these children had significantly lower school grades in math, English, and Romanian, but they had significantly higher scores in a test of computer skills. Social networking and academic performance, Facebook use, and lower grades in university. And by the way, just so I don't get sued by Facebook, this is what they looked at, not me, and presumably the results would apply to other brands of social networking, like... What are the other brands? Bebo and two or others, so we don't get sued. Twitter? One more? Spread the risk? MySpace. There we are. Okay. There is a disconnect between students' claim that Facebook use doesn't impact on their studies and our findings showing that they had lower grades and spent less time studying. So what the students said really doesn't matter. Ignore them and just look at their grades instead. Probably a more effective way of judging the matter. So, the question is, you know, we've moved on, but have our children. And technology is something that we as adults adore. It's very helpful to me as a middle-aged man. I was able to cut and paste all these studies and bring them to you. But again, just to remind you, in case you thought I was younger, I am not a child, I am a middle-aged man. And just because my way of working has moved on, and I like that, doesn't necessarily mean it is good for my children or that they have to have it or that I need an electronic babysitter, so it's okay then. And this is the principle which should guide, in my view, many of our decisions about child welfare policy. And what we seem to be doing as a society is saying, hey, what's convenient for us? We've moved on, man. So, you know, children move on. They don't. Children's needs are exactly the same, and it looks as if they're always going to be, irrespective of what we do in our spare time. Or even at work. Now, fortunately, some responsible medical bodies and governments have started to make some noises about this. They recognize that we've moved on and our children have it. In 1999, the American Academy of Pediatrics, which is the medical body which advises policy to all doctors in America and parents on child health and medical issues, said, too much television can negatively affect early brain development. The American Academy of Pediatrics does not recommend television for children age 2 or younger. And the French government has outlawed the broadcast of all television, educational or otherwise, to children under 3 years of age, as I think it was the autumn of 2008. Quote, this is what they say. Television viewing hurts the development of children under 3 years old and poses a certain number of risks, encouraging passivity, slow language acquisition, overexcitedness, troubles with sleep and concentration, as well as dependence on screens, even when it involves channels aimed specifically at them. So they're taking aim at the so-called educational TV programs and those people who tell you they are for young children. It continues that even foreign channels on cable, which manage to sneak through the system, they must have the following warning on screen for parents. Quote, watching television can slow the development of children under 3, even when it involves channels specifically aimed at them. So, I'll leave you with these thoughts, which are that We need to distinguish, you know, stimulating the child through strong audiovisual sensations is not the same as inspiring or educating the child. So just because toddlers and young children go, like this is the way that a lot of people judge whether something's good for them. If you give them some speed or cocaine, they'll do exactly the same thing. This is not the way you judge whether something is good. And, you know, Melinda will probably tell you this, that if you show children pornography, sadly, they'll probably show all kinds of excited reactions. God's sake, it doesn't mean it's good for them. Just because people are excited by things, especially children, does not mean it's in their best interest to have those things because they're interested in those things. I look at new technology as the flavor enhancer of the audiovisual world. It's like MSG. Technology has moved on, but children's brain development has not changed. And there's a concept called structural neuroplasticity, which Judy Bailey is going to speak to you about later on. The shape, the size, and the function of brains literally changes. You can actually see it on the screen according to how old they are. And the problem is children are adults at 18. Their brains aren't adult till they're about 24 and a half years old. And what they're exposed to will affect their brain development, the actual size, the actual shape, and the way it functions. In these studies, long-term or permanently, children first need to upload information about the real world, the real three-dimensional world, before they can move on to outsourcing those processes through the virtual world of screen technology, or those processes can be spoiled. A child's brain is like a muscle that needs to be flexed. And while new technology may serve as a powerful tool, it must be used and introduced judiciously at much later ages than it's being introduced at the moment. At the moment, it's going down and down and down. We need to rein it back and bring it up. Technology, screen technology, is now displacing the non-virtual, real-world 3D experience that children need. And what we need to do is to get the ratio of real to virtual back to a reasonable balance. It is out of balance at the moment. The tail is wagging the dog. And again, this is not an issue about technology being either good or bad for children, which again, you're probably going to hear on the news tonight. Are TVs good or bad for our kiddies? That's a thick way to discuss this issue. It's simply a question of how much, at what age, and, as Melinda will talk to you about, what on earth are they watching, which is where I'll leave it off afterwards. And again, it comes back to this principle. It's not what children are interested in. It is what is in their best interest, even if they don't like to hear what we have to say about it. That's why we're called adults and they're called children. We have to make decisions for their best interest, and that's not being done at the moment. Cowardly decision makers and policy makers are saying, well, it's popular, it's modern, our kids like it. I'm too scared to say no. Let's just sort of embrace it and be a bit funky and young. Shame on you. My recommendations are, we are told, well, it's all about striking a balance and everything in moderation. These effects were occurring at low levels of viewing. If you consider that these medical effects were occurring at levels of 1 to 1.5 hours a day in many of these studies, and yet our children are often watching 3 to 5 times this amount, what on earth does the term striking a balance or moderation mean? Nobody ever seems to tell you that, do they? There is a dose-response relationship between how early they start watching, how many hours a day, and the likelihood of these effects and the strength of these effects. We need to reduce the dose. We need to have an early years buffer zone where the early years of child development, 0 to 3, are cordoned off and protected from these effects. No screens in children's bedrooms. If you put a refrigerator in a child's bedroom, they will eat more. Surprise, surprise, you put a screen, or in most cases, 2 screens in a child's bedroom, they're going to watch more, and you won't know as easily what they're watching. We need to reduce the overall screen time for other children as well who are older than over 3. We are embarking on a new virtual world, a brave new virtual adventure, and we need to think carefully because there's little to be lost by reducing the amount of screen time our children are watching, but there's a lot to be lost if they continue to spend as much time as they do in front of screens. We need to follow the principle of precaution in like the Hippocratic Oath. First, do no harm. If we're not sure about the effects of screen media on young children, Let's keep it away from them until we know more. It's up to those who are promoting these things to prove beyond any doubt that these things were safe. If they were medical drugs, they would have to do that. And we all have to be reminded of what on earth does the term virtual mean anyway? It means almost, but not quite. So the message is, for our children, keep it real. Thank you very much.